Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Hey, are you looking to expand and grow your business? Are you looking for that edge, that next step up, that paradigm shift? Well, one of the best ways to get you there is through a mentor or a coach. And today's sponsor, Trevor McGregor, he is the man. He's going to get you to be laser focused, to get you onto that next level. And I know from experience dealing with Trevor, he is a master coach, peak performance coach, well over 10,000 coaching hours through clients all over the world. And he helps you achieve better health, more wealth and freedom and contribution than you ever thought possible. Have that coach that holds your feet to the fire. Go on to Trevor's website, coachwithtrevor.com. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. And there you can get a free strategy session with Trevor. And you can decide if he's the right fit for you and you're the right fit for him. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. You will not be disappointed. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and we're excited for another Hump Day Hustle where we're going to be doing the apartment series. And this is the second part of the apartment series. So with me today is John Stiles, as always, with Bridge Realty. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Todd. How are you today?
I'm doing awesome. Trying out a new standing position here. So hopefully it gives me some energy and some bounce and just sick of sitting all the time. So,
yeah, I hear you on that. I've been standing at my desk for a couple of years now. So
how does it work on your feet? Does it hurt your feet and hurt your joints at all? Or do you like it better?
I don't know. I've gotten used to it, but I bought some nicer shoes and I've got one of those floor padding things underneath. So definitely, you know, you got to be aware of those things, but
yeah,
just being stationary, sitting in one position, I always felt like I couldn't get, you know, the keyboard at the right height.
Well, I got a kind of a poor lower back. I had some injuries. And so my lower back is just like always just it's never enjoying the sitting, I guess, is to say it lightly. So it's like I got to figure out something else, whether it's a combination of both stand and sit or something. But I'm going to retrofit. I was talking to you before. I was going to retrofit my desk and see how we can make it work. So we'll see.
Well, I'm for you. It's a good thing.
Well, cool. Let's dive into our second part of this apartment series. The first part we talked about how do you get started. And it wasn't necessarily like all the steps to get started, but more or less as a brand new newbie, there's plenty of stuff that you can do to prep yourself and to get in the corridor to get into apartment investing. I think that's really important. So if you missed the first one, go back to episode 31, John.
Yep.
Go back to episode 31 and check it out. And we talk and then we have a blog on it and you can look at the show notes and go to the blog. And it just goes through, I think there's maybe eight, nine different ways that you can get into apartment investing. And most of them you can do without any money or very, you know, little money. And a lot of them you can do without really any experience. There's only a couple that you need experience and you need money. The other ones you really don't. So, you know, good ways to get into it, to get started and, get on your path. So.
Yeah, that's really great. And Ty, so I think what we want to do today is take it a little bit deeper. For example, if we choose that we're going to be the lead person, so of all those many different options of what we could do to proceed, in this case today, we're going to talk about, being the person that puts the deal together. And so, you know, when somebody's going to start to look at apartment buildings, what are going to be a few of the different factors to consider? You know, what are the different types of properties within apartments?
Yeah, well, first off, you know, if you decide you're the big cheese, right? If you decide you're going to do that, you need to, first of all, have a goal, right? What's your true goal? What are you doing it for? Is it to buy,
you know, get 100 units? Is it to get 1,000 units? Is it get 10,000 units? What kind of company are you trying to build? What kind of goals are you trying to achieve? So that's what you really need to think about. And we talked about that a little bit before, and we've talked about it before, but you got to figure out what's kind of like, what's your overall overachieving goal? And then from there, you can start to break that down. What's that look like? What do I need to do? Step one, step two, year one, year two. And so once you have that all figured out, and that's not for me to tell you, and then you have to figure that out yourself. You just got to decide, how many buildings do I want? What type of company? All that kind of stuff. So then you need to dig further, and you need to figure out, you're ready to buy, right? But you have to figure out, what are you going to actually buy? And you want to figure out what kind of asset class you're going to buy, what size building, all that kind of stuff. So I'll dig into a little bit on first, what are the asset classes? What does that mean when I say that? So there's really four main asset classes, and then there's, you know, breakdown from there. Okay. So you've got your A class properties, and those things are like the newly built bells and whistles. It's got, you know, all the amenities built within the last 10 years or completely renovated. It might be an old historic district that's completely revitalized, and now it's a brand new renovation top to bottom. The only thing that's old in there is, you know, the shell. Everything else is brand new. So these are typically going to be lower returns, but they're considered, you know, really stable. They're that trophy property. So you've got your A class, your A plus, which is like high, high luxury. And then you've got your A minus, maybe it's a little closer to 10 years. It's not tired by any means, but it's got a little bit of wear on it. And that might be your A minus property. Doesn't quite have all the bells and whistles of the brand new property. So then you get your B class. You go from a B plus down to a B minus. So these are buildings that are 10 to 30 years old. Are typically in the B class. The tenants here are white collar. There might be some blue collar, especially as you get like into that B minus, but they're middle class workers, usually living in the apartment by choice. They can move. Many someday will move out and own a house as they get older, if they have kids or whatever. And then the B class area, it's going to be a little older. It's not run down, it's not high crime, but it's got a little bit of that factor. It used to be, you know, it's yesterday's A class, basically. So that's your B class, your workforce housing. And then your C class is also workforce housing, but that's going to be more of like your blue collar workers. It's going to have some government assistance into it, might have some crime going on, usually not high crime until we get into like C minus, then we start to get some, you know, crime issues. But, you know, a lot of the tenants are going to have some credit issues, maybe some criminal blemishes. Buildings are usually 30 to 50 years old. Sometimes you get like a 20 year old building, but usually it's 30 to 50 year old buildings. Like that, this neighborhood, usually you feel safe if you go out there during the day, but you're kind of a little on edge at night. You might not be scared at night, but you're at least kind of on your guard a little bit more. So these renters are typically renters by necessity. Some of them are going to be renters by choice, but most of them are going to be kind of renters by necessity. If they get to that choice, they'll often go up to that B type property before they buy. And I would say a lot of value add opportunities are in the C class area as well, because there's a lot oftentimes difficulties managing these properties. And so there's decent amount of opportunity, and B class, there's some opportunity as well. So, the last one is your D class, and your D class are buildings over 30 years old, usually like the 50 plus year old buildings, 40 plus year old buildings, but they're in, you know, high crime area, a lot of government assistance, a lot of, lower income, you know, in and out of work, have a hard time holding down a job. A lot of people living in D-class are living there for a couple different reasons. One is, again, they have a hard time holding down a job, so they can't afford to live somewhere nicer. So they're just forced to live there. They're not necessarily criminals. Some very good people can live in D-class areas, but they just have a tough time making ends meet. And then the other one is the criminals, or and not necessarily just criminal, but you've got a lot of the criminals, and you've got a lot of people that don't pay their bills, haven't paid their rent. So they've gotten several evictions. So they can't get a better area. So they go into this D-class area because they're forced to go there. It's either there or homeless. And they go to these D-class areas, and they're high crime, they're government assistance. Like I said, a lot of eviction history, bad credit, all that kind of stuff. So the D-class area is going to be a ton of value add opportunity. However, with that value add comes high risk, because everything looks great on paper, but that hinges upon you being able to collect the rents, you know, and being able to actually have occupancy and low maintenance. So what kind of questions do you have on those? I went through those kind of fast. So what kind of questions do you have on those? Anything?
Yeah. You know, when you started off with the A and B class, it seems to be very much determined on like the age of the building.
Yeah.
Then when you get into the C and D class, obviously the age is older, but you seem to talk more about the neighborhood and the clientele that you're attracting. So I guess, is that generally accurate, or is there crossover? Do you have?
Yeah. I mean, it's all crossover, right? Cause you've got A areas and then you've got A properties, right? You could actually have maybe not an A area or A property in a D area, but you could have a B property, you know, a newer property that was built for low income housing in a D or a C area. So you could have a new property in those areas. Same thing with an A area. You could have an old property. In the Twin Cities, we have a lot of historic areas that have, I mean, think of our uptown Minneapolis. A lot of those buildings, not all of them, so there's some new, but a lot of those buildings are 100 plus year old buildings, and they're A areas. They don't have, some of those don't even have all the bells and whistles either. They're just stuck in a very desirable area. They don't have much going on with them, but it's such a desirable area that people will be there. So those are, you know, we have a lot of what I would call B, maybe even C, C plus buildings in an A area. And that's like your uptown. And the only problem is they sell for A prices, even though they're B or C buildings. Yeah. So you can have a mixture of that too, where you have an old building, maybe it's been revitalized and renovated, but it doesn't have any amenities. It's just a building, a square building with walls and maybe some granite in it, and that's it. But it doesn't have the gym and the stuff that the brand new buildings get. So it's kind of a hodgepodge, and you got to just look at what the area is. I would say it's more based on trends. As far as the area goes, it's based on the trends of what's going on and the demographic that's in that neighborhood. So are you looking at, you know, people with high paying jobs? If you are, people with high paying jobs likely in that area is going to be a more of an A-class area. If you're looking at a lot of tenants with no job or having a hard time with getting employment, a lot of times that's going to be in your C and D, especially D areas. So, and then unfortunately, crime follows into typically the people or areas that don't have a lot of jobs and stuff.
So as somebody's kind of learning these different factors, is there a reason why they should pick a certain class over another, or maybe what have you chosen? What have you found a sweet spot between picking a certain class of building and a certain class of neighborhood?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. And that's going to be all dependent on who you are as a person as well. So some people only like A areas and A properties because that's what they're comfortable with. They're comfortable with people that can 100% afford the rent and they want the amenities and they want all that kind of stuff. And that's what they like. They like the sexy trophy properties. And that's fine. You just have to understand that when you buy those properties, typically you're not going to have as high of cap rates. So in a cap rate is basically your return on investment. So your return on investment is going to be lower typically in an A area than it will be in a B or a C area. If you want to deal with D properties, you have to understand that a D property can look sexy and attractive on a piece of paper, but can you perform it, right? So is that tenant, if that tenant has a struggle to keep a job, can you actually collect your rent? Well, they're all government assistance. Okay, so now you've got all Section 8 government type assistance. That's fine. So you're getting your rent, but can you control your tenants to make sure that the crime isn't happening? And not even your tenants. You might have decent tenants, but can you control the neighborhood? Can you control your tenants' friends? Can you control the guy down the street that wants to break into your property? So can you control that type of stuff? And again, typically you're going to have an older property. So let's say you've got a 50, 60-year-old property. It's going to have more maintenance. It's going to have more issues. It's going to have, you know, you have to budget for that kind of stuff. So that's the difficulty with the D-class property. It looks great on paper. But when you really dive into it, it might not be as good as it looks. It's that risk factor, right? So on an A property, I would say if you are a decent manager, not even great, just a decent manager, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get really close to the numbers you projected, as long as you projected properly. But you're going to get really close to your performance. On a D-class property, if you're a average manager, I don't know the exact percentage, but I would say, you know, you've got 30, maybe 40% chance of getting to your numbers. It might even be less. I mean, unless you're an excellent manager, you're going to have a hard time being there. So did that answer kind of what, yeah, where you wanted to go with that?
Yep. And then kind of just based on my past experience managing many different types of properties in different areas, I can just speak to that briefly about, you know, being a good manager has a lot to do with your resilience and, yes, ability to just cope with, you know, always putting out a fire. Maybe literally, maybe figuratively.
Hopefully figuratively.
Right. But not to say that you won't have, you know, issues with higher class properties too. I mean, some of the richest people in the world might be the most demanding people in the world. So yeah, you have to be on your ball, you know, on top of things with each, any type of property that you choose.
Yeah. And the issues are typically different, right? So the higher end properties that are renovated and new, you're probably not going to have as much of the repair and maintenance, but you're going to have that, you know, tenant that's always calling because, you know, this is going wrong or this is good. They're kind of that whiny tenant where the entitled tenant. I mean, it's just how it is. You know, you get some of those, not everyone. And of course in D class, what I'm going to say is not everyone either, but C and D class, you get a lot of times tenants that just don't tell you. They don't tell you that the sink is leaking. They don't tell you that they have cockroaches. They don't tell you that, there's, you know, the neighbor has bed bugs. They don't tell you stuff because they don't care. Like, that's how they're used to living. They just expect it. They don't know that you think or you want to change it. They don't know that. They just expect, like, hey, when something breaks, I just have to deal with it because all my landlords in the past, they didn't ever do anything. So why would I call you? Because nobody else does anything. So you've got a different type of mentality. And now, again, it's not always, but a lot of times you've got a different type of mentality in both of these situations. So,
okay. So what about for yourself? Have you found a sweet spot of what you look for?
Yeah. I don't know if I call it a sweet spot, but kind of right now, my goal property is a C plus up to a B class property. And I shouldn't say property because I look for D properties, but I'm looking for C plus up to a B class, even B plus class neighborhood. So I look more about the neighborhood than I do with the property, because I can always change the property because I'm doing a value add. And that's really important. If you want to do a value add, you're actually looking for that, you know, step down. If you're looking in a B area, you're looking for that C property. And if you really want to get your hands dirty, you're looking for that D property in that B area or in that A area. That's kind of what I look for. I'm looking in that, you know, like I said, C plus to kind of B minus is, I'd say, my biggest, you know, where my properties are typically. And I'm looking for that D property in that B minus neighborhood.
Okay. So, aside from the class of the property or the neighborhood, what are some other factors that, somebody just getting started should consider for their search criteria?
Yeah, I kind of mentioned it already, but, you know, are you going to do a value add? That's one of the quickest ways to add value to the property is do a value add, hence the name. But what does that mean? So it means that you're going to fix a problem, basically. So that property is mismanaged. It could be as simple as a mismanagement of the property. It could be as simple as some expenses that are out of control that we can fix. We know we can fix. So, you know, let's say the tenants are not paying their own electric and gas. And we know that either we can A, it's already metered that way, or B, we can institute like a RUBS type system, which is essentially just charging the tenants, quick and easy, charging the tenants a portion of the utility bill, right? So everybody's paying their fair share, okay? So if we could institute something like that, we can right there just save potentially a ton of money, especially if the market allows for it. You have to make sure the market's going to allow for it, though, because if you're going to change something and the tenants aren't used to it and they can just move down the street to just as nice of a property or maybe even nicer and not have to deal with what you're trying to implement, that's what they're going to do. So you've got to make sure, like, if you're buying a property and you go, geez, you know what? These tenants are, none of them are paying their own electric and gas. I'm just going to charge them electric and gas. You want to make sure at least a good portion of those properties near you are charging the tenants electric and gas. So that's a huge thing that you can do. It's just a management play. The other thing is, you know, low rents. I mean, a lot of property managers, especially in a market that has increased a lot in rent, a lot of managers, property owners don't keep up with the market. So they might be 50, they might be 75, they might be $150 under market value. And, you know, that's the majority of what I end up buying. I bought a 22 unit, just a smaller building, and the rents on that varied from $350 a month all the way up to $480. These are all one bedrooms. So we had two tenants that were paying $350 a month. And we raised those tenants, and they didn't argue at all. We raised them, and we didn't touch their units. We didn't do any remodeling. We raised them from the 350 to 495 in 1 month. And like I said, they didn't complain. They didn't do anything. They understood. They were shocked that they were paying 350.
Yeah.
And they knew if they went somewhere else, they wouldn't get any cheaper rent. And so that we took them up to 495. We took some tenants up a little higher. And the new tenants that we're getting in, we're charging them $550. So we went, you know, and raised those rents by quite a bit. And these are all just one bedroom apartments, small apartments. And, you know, current building I'm doing, we're doing the same thing. I mean, so that's a big thing. And then the other thing you can do is remodeling, and that's always going to help you raise rents even more, as if you can do remodeling. You just have to look at the numbers. You know, let's just say I can buy this building at $2 million and the rents are at X price, and without doing a thing, I can raise the rent $25 a month per unit. Or I can come in and I can put $5,000 per unit into it, and I can raise the monthly rent $150 a unit. Well, what's my return on investment and what's my spread? Does it make sense to put the money into it? Does it make sense just to leave it alone? Because if you're going to do $50 a month raise without doing anything, and then you go and do $5,000 worth of work and you can only get $60 a month, well, it wasn't worth it, right? So you've got to kind of look at that too. So, we'll talk a lot more about value add, by the way. So I'm just going to end the value add right there. That's a good option. What else? You know, are you gonna buy something that's stable and cash flowing right now? What size building are you gonna buy, and what's the pricing? And then what's the age? And that could be with that class that I already talked about, but it could, like I said, there can be a 100-year-old building in the A class area, but do you want that 100-year-old building? Do you know the problems associated with a 100-year-old building? You know, you have old piping, you've got old wiring, you've got old insulation, you've got potentially old HVAC. So you've got issues that could be associated with it that you have higher expenses in. So you have to understand that. So,
when it comes to choosing the size of the building, which, you know, is very much correlated with the price of the building.
Yeah.
Do you think somebody should pick that first and then look for the financing? Or should they kind of assess, well, what kind of networks do I already have? What kind of investors do I think I can come up with? And then from there, choose a size and price point.
Yeah, that's a good question, right? That's that kind of chicken or egg thing. I don't know. That's a good question, because for me, I picked what size I wanted, and then I decided, okay, what's my network look like, and is it big enough? Can I get financing for these types of deals? And then how do I get there? So for me, it was, I want to buy these types of buildings. How do I get there? And what do I need to do to get there? That's one way of looking at it. And that's how I looked at it. It wasn't that I'm only going to buy a 30 unit building because of my network is only going to allow me to buy a 30 unit building. It was, I'm going to buy, you know, 100 plus unit building because that's what I want to do. And how do I get there?
Yeah.
So I'm going to take the steps to get there. I personally, that's the way I like it, but you know, you could go either way, I guess.
I think that for some people, maybe myself included, one of the mental blocks that you might have to overcome is like, say you've been involved in real estate, you're familiar with it, you're familiar with investing, but you haven't actually raised money before. Okay, so I haven't gone out and asking for people to invest in my deals. So I really don't have any idea of how valuable my network is yet.
Yeah, sure.
So,
that makes sense. Figure it out. You know, I mean, honestly, you have to start somewhere, right? And that's what that first kind of part was. You have to start somewhere. Our first podcast was about, you got to start somewhere. So you got to figure out what your network is. You've got to figure out how to raise money if that's in your plan. You've got to kind of figure that stuff out. So how do you do that? Well, you team up with people, you get in the corridor in whatever way that interests you the most, and that's going to help you get there. So, and there's the strategy, and that was in there, of starting small. So it's never a bad thing to go, hey, you know what? I want to buy 200 unit buildings, but I don't feel like I'm there yet. So I'm going to start buying a 10-unit building now, and I'm going to grow that to a 30-unit building, and I'm going to grow that to a 60-unit building, and then I'm going to grow that to a 200-unit building. I don't think that's a terrible strategy at all. I think that's a very sound strategy. So you can always have that end goal, that 200 unit, but now we can start at, okay, we're going to just start at 10. We'll see where that takes us. So.
Yeah, great. So, all right. So now that somebody's selected their criteria, what are some of the ways that they can find opportunities and deals?
Yeah. So you, again, we'll go back to, you need to have your criteria. And once you have it, you need to understand it. So what I would do is write it down. So kind of my boilerplate criteria is I'm looking for 100 plus unit value add deal in C plus to B plus areas, built in 1970 or newer for under $18 million. That buildings have to be, for me, I will go with under 90%, but the buildings have to be, let's say, 80% occupied, and rents need to be a minimum of $75 per unit under the market value. Willing to do cosmetic renovations. I'm willing to do a little bit of structural renovations, a little bit of, some of the main like roofing and stuff like that. But I'd like it to be more of the cosmetic stuff. That it needs to be the bulk of it. And I'm willing to go up to about $10,000 per unit for upgrades. With that goal in mind, then I'm able to tell people about what I'm looking for. I can tell them exactly that. I can type that in an email really easily to a broker or to a seller saying, you know, this is what I'm looking for. And then people can help you out. You know, you've got brokers, you've got appraisers, you've got inspectors, you've got anybody that's in the industry that can help you find deals. So, you know, how do you get deals? Driving neighborhoods is one way. And one way of starting, and I like this just for a starting point, is you got to get comfortable with an apartment, right? So if you're just starting, you got to get comfortable. So driving neighborhoods, looking at apartments, so they're not so scary looking, I think is a great way to do it. It's going to be a lot less efficient with your time, but it's a way to kind of get comfortable and get out there. And you can always write those numbers down. A lot of times a management company or the owner will have their number right on that building. You can always write that down and call them. Hey, you're looking to sell. You can get comfortable on the phone. I mean, that's a good way to do it. Again, it's not going to be a really efficient use of your time, but it's a great way to kind of start to get comfortable. You can go on to LoopNet and the MLS to look for apartment buildings. It's another great way just as a beginner to get started, or if you're looking at, you know, I want to get into this market, it's not in my state, or I just don't know anything about that market. It's a great place to begin because it gives you an idea of what stuff is selling for, gives you an idea of who is selling stuff. So you could go, you know, go onto those sites. Usually those sites aren't going to have a lot of, they might have some of the smaller buildings like that, you know, 20 and under apartment building. Those are serious sellers on LoopNet, but usually the 20 plus, they're not going to be on LoopNet. It's going to be pocket deals from the broker. The broker is going to send it out to their own network. But with LoopNet, what I would do is it always tells you who the person that's listing it is. So you can contact that person and ask them, can I get the offering memorandum, or a lot of times called the OM. And all that is like a big listing packet. It tells you all about it. It's got a lot of bells and whistles. It's the sales package. Can I get the rent roll? Can I get your current profit loss? Also a lot of times called like the T12, trailing 12 months of income and expenses. And then ask, you know, what's the condition and what are the renovations? Is there any upside? You know, talk with that broker and get that relationship going. And then the next one would be build the relationships with brokers and try to start getting some of their off-market deals. And that takes a while. That takes that building that relationship. So, And then you got to go look at properties. I think that's a really important step. That's one thing that I did. You got to get inside of them. You got to look at buildings. You got to ask questions. You know, how old's the roof? How old's the boiler? What type of wiring's in here? What type of breakers? How old's the plumbing? What type of plumbing is it? You know, what's the construction? Is it spancrete? Is it steel? Is it wood? You know, walking those units and find, does this unit represent the rest of the units in the building? You know, how many vacants are there? Why are they vacant? That type of stuff. So asking all those questions is really going to help, really get you into that mindset of, okay, this is, I can actually do this.
Yeah, that's great. You know, one of the other aspects of this, and maybe this goes back to the criteria, but as far as where the buildings might be located, are they within reach where you can just drive to them and visit them? Or is it going to be something out of state or out of the immediate city that you're living in?
Yeah.
So that can affect, you know, how easily you can get into the properties. But
yeah, you know, and here would be my advice for anybody who's going to invest out of state, right? Say if you're in a state or a city where it just doesn't make sense, you can't do it and make the profit or have your strategy. What I would say is you still should, if you're a beginner, I think you should still work in your area, look in your area. Get comfortable with looking at buildings. Get comfortable with talking to brokers because you don't know when your market's going to shift. And it's nice to have those relationships anyway. Even if you don't buy anything today, it's still nice to have those relationships. And understand when your market shifts and you want to be buying, at least they know you. At least you understand your market a little bit. So I think it's important to still look in your market, whether you're going to buy there or not, right away. But if you are going to be out of state, don't hide behind your computer. You got to get face to face, screen to screen. Just doesn't work. I mean, it's okay to get started, but you've got to take that plane trip there. You've got to talk to the brokers. You've got to talk to lenders. You've got to, you know, you've got to get face to face with people. That's the only way you're going to get any kind of good deal.
Yeah, I've heard that when you're selecting a market out of state, it's helpful if it's a market where you travel to anyways, maybe for family or for vacations or whatever, you know, if you can have a secondary reason for going there, that can be helpful for getting you to the properties.
Yeah, absolutely. Or at least a city that you enjoy going to, right? So if you travel there and you despise going to that city, I don't know if I'd invest there, even though there is potentially good opportunity. It'd be, to me, tough to just set down a bunch of money and hate going there every time.
Yep. So maybe the other thing, as far as finding properties, you've talked about driving neighborhoods, going online, building a relationship with brokers. And then additionally, if you can get in contact with the property owners directly through yep. direct mail, or if you can find their phone numbers and just yep. ask them directly if they're interested in selling.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Your number one way to get properties is definitely going to be broker relationships. I mean, that's just going to be number one. And like I said, a lot of them don't put their listings out there to the general public. I mean, they might be on their own website, but they're not going to be on you. A lot of times you won't find them on a LoopNet. It's just how it is. And you might say, well, that doesn't make any sense because why wouldn't you just broadcast it as many people as you want or as you can? But the problem is these brokers, they want to make sure if they've got a property, if you've got a $10 million property you're selling and you just broadcast it to everyone, what's going to happen is you're going to get a lot of tire kickers. And you're going to have some Joe Schmo that writes an offer you have no clue about, you've never talked to before, you don't know if they can close on the building, and do you want to represent, you're representing your seller as the broker. Do you really want to represent your seller and say, hey, here's a great offer. I got no clue if this guy's any good, but here's a great offer. Or would you rather go, hey, I know this person, they're serious, they're committed to the market, You know, they've got things in place. I believe they're going to be a very strong candidate to close on this property. That's the person you want to bring to it. So if you don't have a relationship with the broker, it's going to be tough for that broker to say anything good about you if they don't know you. So, yeah. So that's, I think, one of the biggest reasons why they don't just blast it out into public, is because of that. And they want to take care of their own people, right? They want to take care of their seller. They want to take care of their buyers. They want to try to make as many people happy as they can. And if you're willing to pay the price to get the property sold, that's what they want to do. And, you know, unlike residential, it's a lot different than residential. I guess it's most residential. It's easier to close on a residential because you got your finance. If you've got a financing letter, likely you can close on, right? With commercial, it takes a lot more. I mean, you got to get a lot more in place to be able to close, and you want to make sure that those people are serious.
Yeah. So, well, good. Is there anything else that we should cover in this episode here?
No, I don't think so. I think we'll go in a lot more detail and you know, how to build broker relationships and more detail how to find properties and stuff like that in future episodes. But for this, I think it's good. Just skim some of the main points and we'll talk more in detail. Probably the next time, next week, I think what we'll talk about is how to build your team. And from start to finish, everybody that should be involved in your team, or at least the minimum people, how to build that team and what we can do to make sure we have a good team in place.
Sounds great.
So I think that's it though. Anything else cooking, John, that you want to talk about?
No, I'm out here looking for buyers and sellers myself and all about keeping those relationships up.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I did just have somebody contact me today who, you know, they gave me kind of very similar to what you did. They said, I'm looking for this. And that's really helpful for me. Then I, you know, when I come across that, I know who to call for that particular type of building. So just kind of a real life example of putting that into practice there.
Yeah. You know, if you've got that criteria, you can give the broker is going to be a lot more likely to bring you those types of properties. You're at least close, but at least they know. Here's the biggest reason I think that's important to do is they know you're serious. When somebody gave you that, well, whoever gave you that criteria, what was the reaction? What was a true reaction in your head when they gave you that criteria?
Well, they know what they're looking for.
Right. They're serious, right? Did you think these people are serious?
Yeah.
Yeah. But if they just called you up and said, hey, John, I'm looking for a property. I mean, you'd want to help them, but yeah. It's not nearly as serious as,
yeah,
this is what I'm looking. I mean, you remembered them, right?
Yeah, because I do get people that say, when I tell them, when I ask them, you know, what are you looking for? They say, just, you know, anything that makes sense.
Yeah, like, well, what makes sense?
What makes sense to who?
Yeah, makes sense. Exactly. Makes sense to who?
This makes sense to the seller, but it's going to make sense to you.
Right.
But it's definitely a lot harder. I've got a whole long list of people that are looking for deals that make sense. I got a short list of people that are looking for very specific things.
And I tell you what, when you find something that's close to that specific thing, who are you going to call first?
The short list.
And if you can't find them on the short list, then you'll tell your long list about it. But the short list is going to get it first. And that's what you want to be on. You want to be on the short list. So, well, cool, man. I think that was good. So we will call it a day, and we'll continue next week with the apartment series. And people can like us on Facebook and write some comments on Facebook if they got any questions about anything we've talked about. If they want to hit something that maybe they want to go in greater detail on, they can do that. And then, of course, check us out on, you know, iTunes or SoundCloud or whatever, and give us a review on iTunes. We'd love to hear what you think about the show. And I think that's it, man.
All right. Thanks.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the U.S. Our simple, proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Get your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com/guide. That's NORADA realestate.com/guide.